This morning, I want to think about, for just a few minutes, the interactions that we have with the people that are around us. And we have to understand that most of the people that we interact with don't really share our belief system, and they, in fact, probably have a hard time understanding why we do what we do. I remember when Jenny was dating her, now her husband, Jeff, and she was going to go out on a date with him, and he was trying to figure out when, and he thought Sunday afternoon would be a good time. And Jenny said, well, I have to go to church with my dad. And so Jeff just looked at her kind of quizzically and said, why? You went to church Sunday morning. Why would you go twice? And that's just one illustration. People will have a hard time understanding why Christians would give aid to someone that they don't even know, that they don't have anything in common with. Why would they help someone who was actively persecuting them? And the question is, should we care that people around us, that our neighbors that observe us, don't understand? Should we expect that they would have any kind of respect for what we do and for what we believe? I was reflecting on that this week, and I was looking at some things that have happened here in Eugene. Back in 2010, Kim and I weren't here, but does anybody remember that there were protests over a cross that was at a small Christian university here? It was on their property, and I guess it got really ugly at some point. I was watching, if you're interested, I was watching some of the protests that were going on there, and this is things that were produced by one of the news stations. How do you try to come to grips with people who don't want you to do something good, who don't want you to have the right to have a cross or wear a cross or to carry a Bible with you? Jesus knew that his people would be hated. He knew that, in a sense, they would even be despised because of what they are. And he also knew that we should obey God instead of obeying men. We should have respect for God's perspective far more than the respect that we have for the people that are around us. That's the way Jesus was. In Matthew, the 15th chapter, beginning at verse 10, Jesus is talking to a crowd that is upset because his apostles have walked through a field of grain. And as they went through the field of grain, they would pick a few heads and rub them in their hand, and then they would eat it. And this is what Jesus had to say. He called the crowd to him. He said, listen and understand. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth, that's what defiles them. The disciples came to an end, and they asked him, do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this? The Pharisees were the most strict sect of the Jews. I've often talked about the bruised and bleeding Pharisees. When they went outside, they didn't want to see something that they shouldn't see, and so they closed their eyes. They were always running into walls and falling down. So they called them the bruised and bleeding Pharisees. They never would have said anything like this. And the disciples asked Jesus, they said, these people were offended at what you had to say. Jesus responded, every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted will be pulled up by the roots. Leave them. They're blind guides. If the blind lead the blind, they'll both fall in the ditch. Don't worry about them. Jesus wasn't worried about them. Jesus was always about doing what God wanted him to do. And yes, people were offended. Philippians, the second chapter, at verse 8. The Apostle Paul talks about this in terms of the ultimate offense. Jesus, being found in appearance as a man, humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. He understood that people were going to be offended by what he had to say. And it didn't deter him from what he had determined should be done. Mirroring Jesus, the apostles said pretty much the same thing, didn't they? There were threats, there was opposition, but the apostles and the disciples said, we are going to obey God. We are going to proclaim our allegiance to God in spite of what you may say, in spite of what you might argue. When Peter was called before the Sanhedrin and he was told, don't preach anymore, he said, we must obey God rather than human beings. You can threaten me. It doesn't matter. Paul wrote often in his letters, he said to the Thessalonians, we're not trying to please people, but God, who tests our hearts. Galatians, the first chapter, at verse 10. He said, am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? And then there is this incredible statement. He said, if I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. It's almost as if you can't be so worried about people who take offense because you pray before you eat. You can't be so worried about people who take offense when you don't join in with them in the ribald jokes. You can't be terribly concerned about all of that. We have to teach, we have to practice what's true, regardless of what happens from our neighbors. That's absolutely true. We ought to obey God rather than men. But we still need to be concerned about what our neighbors say. This is one of the great paradoxes of biblical information. You still need to be concerned about what your neighbors have to say about you. We ought to have a good reputation among unbelievers. We should be known for a number of things. First, the good works that we do. Matthew, the fifth chapter. You are the salt of the earth. If the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You're the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand and it gives light to everyone in the house in the same way. Let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And he said that in light of knowing that in spite of all the good deeds he did, they were going to kill him. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. You know what the response in John, the 12th chapter, was of the leadership of the Jews? We've got to kill this Jesus. We have to put him to death. And not only that, they decided they needed to kill Lazarus too. It is an amazing thing. Jesus says, do your works so that the people around you will see what you do and they will glorify your Father who is in heaven. In Titus, the second chapter, the Apostle Paul is giving instruction to Titus about how to teach and what to teach. He says, in everything, set them, and he's talking about the young men. He says, in everything, you set them an example by doing what's good. 2 Peter, the second chapter, at verse 12, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of wrongdoing, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. He understands that they will be accused of wrongdoing, but he also understands that you must do your good works so they will glorify God. Great paradox. We also ought to be known for being gentle. Philippians, the fourth chapter, at verse 5, the apostle just right straight to the point. Let your gentleness be evident to all. If that doesn't characterize you, you're not doing what God expects. It needs to be evident to all men. And you need to be unified. You know, when Jesus was preparing for the crucifixion, he called his apostles together in John, the 17th chapter, and he prayed what I think is really the Lord's Prayer. The other one in Matthew 5, that's the model prayer that Jesus taught his apostles to pray. But in John, the 17th chapter, this is what Jesus prayed. My prayer is not for them alone. He's talking to God about the apostles. He says, I pray also for those who will believe on me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I've given them the glory you gave me, that they may be one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought into complete unity, that the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you loved me. We need to be known for being one. We need to be known for honorable behavior. When the Apostle Paul was tasked with taking funds that were gathered throughout his travels to Jerusalem to help with the needs that existed there. That they had a terrible drought, and Christians throughout the world sent funds so that they could be relieved. They sent them often by the hands of Paul. And Paul took people with him, and he explains why he took people with him to deliver those funds. He says, we're taking pains to do what's right, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the eyes of man. See, Paul could have gathered those funds, taken them to Jerusalem. He would have given them to the apostles' distribution would be, or to the elders' distribution would be made as any man had need. That's absolutely acceptable. But Paul took people with him so that they could testify, yes, this is what he did. When we make a contribution to the church, one person doesn't take charge of those funds. We have two people that count those funds, and they just deposit them into the account that the church maintains so that the church can pay its bills. That's doing things that are honorable in the sight of men. I never touch that money. I never touch that contribution. Is there anything wrong with me being one of the people that counts the contribution? No, nothing wrong with it at all. But I do that so that I can't be accused. I try to do things that are honorable in the sight of all men. Well, look at Romans 12 chapter, verse 17. He says, do not repay evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. We need to be known for honorable behavior. Now, how are we going to resolve this tension? On the one hand, we know we're going to be misunderstood, slandered, we'll even be criticized for following Jesus. I don't know how many of you follow the debates that are happening about abortion, but there are people who were arrested for sitting on the curb outside of a facility that performed abortion, silently praying. That's all they were doing. We will be misunderstood. We'll be slandered. We'll be criticized. Sometimes we'll be thrown into jail. Christians should, at the same time, have a good reputation among non-believers. And so that's caused some people to try to resolve the tension by saying, you need to change your teaching and your practice. You need to find a way to be less offensive and more accommodating. So stop talking about those things. Or, as some people argue, we could simply ignore our neighbors. The fact that people are offended doesn't matter. I don't think either one of those is the right approach. Neither one of those is faithful to our calling. So let's look at how we might respond. This is Paul's resolution. He says, if it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone, in Romans 12, verse 18. If it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace. Conflict is not inevitable. Conflict is not a badge of acceptability. The fact that I can make somebody mad at me does not testify to God's admiration. Do what's possible for you to do. Don't just antagonize people. Well, this is the way that Peter talks about it. Who's going to harm you if you're eager to do good? Interesting question. Then he answers. He says, even if you should suffer for what is right, you're blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. Believe in your hearts. But in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone that asks you to give the reason for the hope that is within you. But, he says, and this is the key, do this with gentleness and respect. This is what I call deities. Ultimate solution to the question. Matthew 6, beginning at verse 1. Jesus said, be careful not to do good works in front of others. Don't do them to be seen by others. If you do, your Father in heaven will not reward you. So, don't do good works so that other people will praise you. When you do give to needy people, do not announce it by having trumpets blown. Do not be like those who only pretend to be holy. They announce what they do in the synagogues and on the streets. They want to be honored by others. What I'm about to tell you is true. They have received their complete reward. Their focus is on people. And if that's the reward that they're seeking, they have it. He says, when you give to the needy, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Then it will be done secretly. Your Father will reward you. He sees what you do secretly. Yes, we do good works. We're known for honorable deed. We're known for doing the kind of things that God expects us to do. We don't do it so that anybody sees it. In fact, I'm convinced that most of the time, nobody knows all of the good that we accomplish. People say, well, you never do anything to support widows and orphans. Yeah, we do. Somebody adopts a baby, we make sure that they have help. Nobody knows. It's done in secret. It doesn't appear anywhere on the balance sheet of the church. Sometimes we don't even take it off on our taxes. But we do what we do in secret, knowing that God sees what we do. That's why we're here. We want to serve God. And we want to do things that are honorable. We want to be able to give a reason to the people that ask us why we do what we do with reverence and respect.